Welcome back, everybody. It is your Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. As always, it is Ian Mendes and Haley Salvian with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on this show, we're going to touch on some individual rivalries that kind of sprung up over the weekend around the NHL. We're talking Brady Tkachuk against Brendan Lemieux. Artemi Panarin against Brad Marchand. And an oldie but a goodie. How about a little Sidney Crosby against Alex Ovechkin? Arpan Basu, who is our Montreal Canadiens beat reporter, he's going to drop by after listening to the Jeff Molson press conference on Monday, give us his thoughts on some seismic changes for the Canadiens this past weekend. The Pittsburgh Penguins sale to the Boston Red Sox group has been finalized. We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll take some listener questions, wrap with some multiple choice madness, asking who's going to end up playing more games in the NHL down the road, Matt Murray or Evander Kane, a couple of high-priced players placed on waivers over the past week. But before we kick off the show, Haley, want to remind our listeners here, and depending on when you listen to this podcast, if you're listening to us on Monday, the 29th of November, okay, I want to direct you to theathletic.com/hockeyshow. You're going to have a few hours left, okay, till midnight tonight. It's our best deal of the year. You can subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month for the next 12 months. Again, if you're listening to us on Monday, and you've downloaded this, and you're not a subscriber on the print side, get on it. $1 a month for 12 months, athletic.com/hockeyshow. And I need to know, based on that, did Haley Salvian do any online shopping? Black Friday, Cyber Monday, anything in between?
You know what? I didn't, which I don't know why. I think I got overloaded with emails about it that it just annoyed me that I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this. I don't need 65 emails from places I've shopped at once in my life telling me that I could get, you know, this bar of soap for 10%. It wasn't soap. It was like clothing and shoes and whatever places that you get. I was like, you know what? This annoys me. I don't really need anything right now. So I didn't shop. I stayed home. It's been busy with work, so I avoided the mall because I don't like being around lots of people. Just generally a cranky person. In general, I don't need the lines and the crowds at the mall. And online shopping, no. Like the one place I shop at, it's like I shop at the most. It's like the funniest thing. Like they'll have big Black Friday, like up to 60% off select styles. But then the stuff that's the most popular to buy, it's like $5 off and there's no sizes. It's all sold out. So it's just like, what is the point in going to this place? It's Aritzia. If there's any like, I don't know, millennial people listening to this, they probably understand looking at the Aritzia sale and seeing like a t-shirt that's usually $28 that's now on sale for $26.50 and they only have it in size like extra, extra, extra small. And you're like, ooh, got to capitalize on that deal. Nope. So nothing for me.
Nothing for you.
I was smart with my wallet.
I like going to Marshalls and fighting people, you know, for cheap t-shirts and that type of thing. And that's a year-round thing. You don't have to go to, you can go to Marshalls anytime and battle people. You
know? Nordstrom Rack rocks for that.
Nordstrom Rack. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's a year round. Like a random pair of like designer shoes that are like $100 instead of thousands. And there's like a fist fight for the right size. Luckily, I'm not even going to say it. I was going to talk about my shoe size, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, that's going to get weird here.
Let's not bring up that.
Yeah, let's not do that. Let's talk about something more normal, which is biting. Okay. Oh. So Brendan Lemieux, and I'm watching the game because I'm a guy who covers the Ottawa Senators, and I'm watching this game, Ottawa at LA. And you could see Brady Tkachuk right away get up from this scrum. And Brady, for anybody who knows Brady, he's a very passionate, fiery guy. But the way that he got up from this altercation with Brendan Lemieux, it was different. You could tell he was sour and he was sideways. And you could see him going to the referee, showing his hand. And sure enough, Brady Tkachuk comes out and in fact, why don't we play this audio? I feel like this audio is worth playing because it's very rare to hear an NHL player go after another fellow player in this particular manner. This is Ottawa Senators forward Brady Tkachuk talking about Brendan Lemieux after the game on Saturday in Los Angeles.
I think it is the most gutless thing somebody could ever do. Not even children, but it's this guy is just, you can ask any one of his teammates. Nobody wants to play with him. This guy is a bad guy, bad teammate, you know, focus on himself all the time. Just the guy's a joke. He shouldn't fucking be in this league. It's this guy's gutless. I know no other team wants him. He's going to keep, you know, begging to be in the NHL, but no team's going to want him. This guy's just an absolute joke and just a bad guy. And it's just, it's gutless, but I can't really wrap my head around it. Children don't even do this. This guy's just a bad guy and not even a good player either.
Code of conduct broken, obviously, big time. How shocked were you when that happened?
It's outrageous. It's like, kids don't even do that anymore. It's babies do that. And the fact that he decides it's, I don't even know what he's thinking. He's just a complete brickhead. He's got nothing up there. Bad guy, bad player, but what a joke he is. So it's a couple more years of, I don't even think it's a couple more years. It's ticking for him. Nobody wants him.
Haley, that's some gold audio. I know that the words that he said were widely shared on social media. I think it's different when you hear it. When you hear it, it's even better. That's some gold audio from Brady Tkachuk on Brendan Lemieux. A couple of questions here. First of all, was he justified in saying that and being so over the top angry about what happened? Because again, you don't often hear this. I loved hearing it as a media member, as a fan. You like hearing authentic, legitimate, honest quotes from players. That's absolutely what that was. What did you think of Brady Tkachuk coming out and spitting venom here?
Yeah, well, I think when I first just like saw the clip of how angry he was in the moment, like I don't think I've ever seen Brady Tkachuk like that before, right? Like that intense, that like just really heated and pissed off about what happened. So I mean, biting in like there's so much stuff that shouldn't be in hockey, right? Like, and this is obviously something that's down the list in terms of some of the bigger picture stuff we talk about. So I don't want people to like take what I'm saying and think like, oh, she's, you know, fighting for just this. But like, there's why are we biting in hockey? It's not a thing that we should be doing. It's gross, especially within the context of COVID right now. Like the fact that Brady's hand started bleeding, like he bit into Brady Tkachuk's hand, like he broke skin on another person. Like it's just, it's gross. It shouldn't be happening. And I think Brady Tkachuk absolutely is allowed to be angry. I do wonder like what else has happened between those two or what else has happened with Brendan Lemieux that hasn't been shared in the past that we don't know about for Brady to be so intensely angry about him as a bad person and as a nobody in the league likes him, stuff like that. Like there's little things, there's stuff that's come out about Brendan Lemieux in the past, but like obviously there's a lot more that we're dealing with here than just him biting Brady. For Brady to react in such a holistic way, I guess, against him. But like you said, I think it's great. Like this is a league with such like watered down, careful, cliche answers all the time. And that's part of what I like the most about both Tkachuks is that they're not afraid to, I think they both resort to the cliche sometimes. I think they're both careful sometimes, but they're also not afraid to just unload in ways like that. And show their personality and actually say something. So I'm not going to complain about what Brady said when we're just like as media members and fans too are just clamoring for somebody to show something. And Brady did that. And now I have a new diss to add to my repertoire. Brickhead. I love it.
Such a brickhead. Like, I love it too because it's like rated PG, right? You can drop it anywhere. You are such a brickhead.
It's like calling someone like you're a stupid head.
Yeah, I love
like
it.
You're it's a just, butt.
It's like it's rated PG. It's a PG rated tirade, and I love it.
It cuts deep.
It does. It does. And you know, Jonathan Quick, as you would imagine, came to Brendan Lemieux's defense, saying he called Tkachuk's comments garbage. But what do you expect, right? Like that's his teammate sticking up. Now we should point out to our listeners at the time of this recording, we were recording this around 12 noon on Monday. Department of Player Safety has not levied their ruling on Brendan Lemieux. There is a possibility that this is greater than five games based on the in-person element that was offered to him. My question is, what's a fair suspension here if they are able to review the tape, talk to Tkachuk, talk to Lemieux, talk to the officials and say, yeah, you know what? He definitely bit him. I've heard, I'm going to point something out here. And I'm not saying I agree with this, but I have heard from a lot of people on Twitter saying, if someone sticks their glove or their hand in your mouth, what are you supposed to do? Like, that's I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that that's the defense that's out there. Somebody sticks their hand in your mouth. What do you expect's going to happen? I think you need to review the tape. You need to see how this all came about. But I would imagine there's going to be a 5 or 6 or 7 game suspension. The only thing that bothers me, though, is sometimes you see, like, I'd rather this league gets down really hard on hits to the head. Like, that's the epidemic in the game. The epidemic in the game is not biting. Like, if you send a strong message to Brett, biting will not be tolerated. Like, yeah, okay, but there's only one guy doing it. Like, who cares? Like, we don't have an epidemic of biting in the league. We have it's the shots to the head. It's the cheap stuff we want to get out. So I'm less interested in this. Like, if they give them 5 games or they give them 10 games or 20, whatever they give them, I'm not going to be like, good, send the message, because I don't think there's a message to be sent. I don't think anybody's out there on the fence about biting in hockey, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's why I said, like, I'm not trying to make – when I'm saying, like, we shouldn't be biting people in hockey, that's what I mean when I'm saying, like, this is lower on the list. Like, this isn't the, like, we need to get rid of this in the game. We do, but it's not like we're screaming it from the rooftops because it's happening all the time. I think that, like, if this ends up just being like the same fine that Artemi Panarin got for throwing a glove, that's stupid. Throwing a glove in a verbal argument and biting somebody, potentially multiple times, like there was potentially 2 bites to the hand of Brady Tkachuk. That's not the same fine. Like, that's a thing. I just would like to see this being treated as its own, and like, it's just gross. It shouldn't happen. I don't know if he gets suspended for multiple games. I don't know what the max fine is for biting. I don't have the rule book right in front of me, but you would just like to see this, as with everything that happens in the game, and it sounds so cliche, we're just talking about it, but I would just like this to be taken, I've dealt with properly, you know? Like, I'm so sick of seeing the stuff that comes down, the decisions that come down, and like being disappointed and consistently being like, oh, that's it. You know, it's the hits of the head. It's the boarding calls. It's the dangerous cross checks. It's the biting. Like, can we just get something right, please? That's all I really care about is I would like to read the verdict and say like, yeah, that makes sense on a consistent basis.
You'd like to read, again, a lot of people are waiting for the statement to come out from Department of Player Safety. My question is, do you want longtime actor Gilbert Gottfried to read out the statement? Because we want to play a little audio here. If there's one gift that this Tkachuk Lemieux thing has given us, it is the soundbite that we played earlier. But then there's this. So a fan, and I love the fact that his Twitter handle is John Cougar Colleen Camp. I don't know what the backstory is, but this guy actually hired Hollywood actor Gilbert Gottfried, who I think, like, see, you're probably too young to know Gilbert Gottfried, right? I'm thinking, Haley, in your 20s?
I know who that is.
You do know who? Okay, I didn't know. I wasn't sure. He's like, I think his best stuff was in like the Problem Child franchise of movies. I think that's where Gilbert Gottfried is like best known from. Anyway, annoying, grating voice. And this guy on Twitter, Hockey Fan, decided to pay Gilbert Gottfried through the Cameo app to read the Brady Tkachuk, kind of verbal dressing down of Brendan Lemieux. So I think we've got the audio of that. If we can play that here, I just want our listeners, like, just to appreciate the absurdity of this situation.
This is the one time I'm going to answer this, said Tkachuk. It was the most gutless thing somebody could ever do. The guy's just a joke. He shouldn't be in the league. The guy's gutless. No other team wants him. It's outrageous. Kids don't even do that anymore. Babies do that. And I don't even know when he was thinking. He's just a complete brickhead. He's got nothing up there. Bad guy, bad player. What a joke he is to Tkachuk.
I mean, I love how he pronounces Brady Tkachuk's name there. I'm all in for this new thing where you get like B and C level celebrities to kind of reenact media availabilities from the NHL, Haley. I'm all in on this.
Yeah, people should start using the whole cameo thing way better than just happy birthday messages. Like, let's get more people reading random statements from the NHL. I think that'd be really funny. And because, like, with cameo, you can actually pay for, like, pretty decent celebrities, too. Like, can you imagine spending how much money it would cost to get someone, like, really famous to just read an NHL statement or something? What do you think that would cost to get, like, an A-list celebrity to read?
Why don't we look it up?
Okay.
And tell me what, what are we thinking of, like Matt Damon level of celebrity?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Like, I don't even think that guy's...
Morgan Freeman.
Oh, man. Morgan Freeman would do such a great, dramatic reading of this thing. That guy's not available on Cameo. There's no way. Like,
he did the Sens Foundation commercials.
Yeah,
it's not Cameo, but like he did it.
Yeah,
did
but how much did that cost?
Well, exactly.
They didn't go through Cameo. I'll tell you that.
No.
So I don't know that. Like, you'd have to go with a Kickstarter with a bunch of hockey fans. Like one fan isn't going to pay $5,000.
No,
are they for like a 90-second message from Matt Damon?
So I don't know, how long these messages are based on like the price that's here, you know? There's a lot of Sopranos actors on here.
But like, Office. What if I want one of the Olsen twins? What's that going to run me?
Are they
give me Mary Kate. I want Mary Kate to read a statement from the Department of Player Safety. What am I in for?
I don't know. She's not on here. I'm panic scrolling.
The Olsen twins seem like they're prime Cameo candidates. No?
I don't know.
That's shocking.
Oh my God, the voice actor for Winnie the Pooh's on here. Oh my God. Oh my God, it's $287 to get Jim Cummings to read something. That's Winnie the Pooh. Oh my God. Can you imagine the Winnie the Pooh voice like reading something? Reading that Brady Tkachuk thing about he's a bad guy.
I want Eeyore reading out the Brady Tkachuk. You know? Ooh.
He's a bad guy.
Can you imagine with the Eeyore voice? I think that would be better.
That was a really bad impression.
See, that was a good impression.
I think I tweeted something like maybe a year ago. Oh, you can get the coach from High School Musical. Oh my gosh. Wow.
See, why aren't we doing this?
Do you think we have a budget for a cameo?
Yeah. On the Athletic Hockey Show. You know when we do the intro, when I do the intro to the show, hey, coming up this week. Why aren't we hiring somebody through Cameo to read our 45-second intro?
Like, I will personally pay to get the Winnie the Pooh voice.
Yeah.
To say welcome to the Athletic Hockey Show.
Is that 287 American, though? 287 American?
Canadian.
Canadian. Okay. I was thinking 287 American. That's like 400 Canadian.
This is the best thing I think we've ever done on the show is scroll through Cameo.
That's probably more of an indictment on the rest of the body of work from us.
You can get the guy who played the Night King in Game of Thrones, even though he doesn't really, I think he just screeches a little bit.
Yeah. See? This is what we should do.
Let's get some, if there's anyone listening that is still listening to this.
They're listening.
Let us know who we should pay for on Cameo.
There we go.
It'd be really funny to just get like James Duthie or something.
But they're on a different app. Like James Duthie, they're on, is it Memo?
Oh, I see it. Okay. No, we're sticking with Cameo.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They're on Memo.
So, it would just have been funny to get like a hockey adjacent.
Yeah.
Somebody like who's like more famous than us, but still in hockey broadcast to do it. It's like, hey, can you do the intro for our show today?
Yeah.
We'll give like you $20.
Just go up to Darren Pang and be like, do you mind reading this?
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep scrolling while you talk about hockey.
And then
I'm going to find someone for us.
You're going to find somebody.
I'm going to find the Olsen twins.
The Olsen twins might be really far down on the list. I just want to say. And imagine like
that might mean they're cheap.
But imagine it costs more for like Mary-Kate than it did for Ashley. Like they're like the Sedins, right? Like they come as a, like they're the same, right? Like you couldn't get one without the other, I'm thinking.
Yeah, nope. Their movies were great. Got to kick it up. Oh,
ugh.
Good stuff. New York Minute. Oh man, missed that.
But were all the movies like the same premise where they were like, either they're switching or they're in the wrong spot or there's been some misunderstanding? Like they were
kids' movies.
Exactly.
What do you want from them?
I don't know. I don't know what I want. Okay, listen, we're talking about Brendan Lemieux and Brady Tkachuk and the biting. That wasn't the only great kind of individual rivalry from the weekend. Haley, that gif of Artemi Panarin throwing his glove at Brad Marchand as time expired between the Rangers and the Bruins was something that was shared quite widely as well on social media. So at the end of that game, Rangers and Bruins, Panarin is jawing at Marchand and vice versa. And finally, the Rangers superstar has enough, takes his glove off and whips it. And with great accuracy, mind you, like it was a precise throw, right? Like it was like, man, was Artemi Panarin like a high school quarterback or something? Cause it was delivered with great accuracy. Now, what I think is interesting is Arthur Staple covered that game, said the reason why Artemi Panarin was upset with Marchand is that, this is from Arthur Staple's piece on the weekend. According to his source, Brad Marchand made some Russian-centric comments towards Panarin along the lines of, quote, nobody likes you there, while bringing up Russian President Vladimir Putin, who, of course, Panarin has been very critical of Putin in the past. Panarin had enough, and it might draw the attention of the Department of Player Safety. Now, it's worth pointing out, Marchand does have a visit with DOPS on Monday, Department of Player Safety, but that's for a slew-footing incident against Vancouver. But let's go back to what happened with Panarin, and I'm wondering, it seems to me that would cross a line. Like, if you're making comments about Vladimir Putin and Russia to Artemi Panarin, I'm sorry, to me that crosses a line. I don't know what you think.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, especially knowing what happened with Artemi Panarin, was that at the beginning of this season or last year?
Last season,
where he, you know, took a leave of absence from the team because I think there was legitimate. We talked about this on the show with what happened with Russia, and you know, there was a legitimate like fear for his safety and his personal well being, and he took a leave of absence. So even that aside, to be making comments like that, it's just inappropriate. It's stuff like that where there's chirping in the game, there's things that people say. Sometimes it can be funny. It just crosses the line. There's no need to be making comments to people because of where they're from or, you know, nobody likes you in your home country, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, again, I feel like we talk about stuff like this all the time. Like we got to get rid of that in the game because there's just so much stuff that it's like we need to just get rid of this shit enough. So yeah. It's not cool. It's not funny. You know, the glove throw, the whole situation, it was funny at first. You know, I was just like, oh, is that allowed? Like he just whipped his glove. Like, that's really funny. What a fun clip. And it's not that you get the context and you're like, yeah, that's not funny. I think he absolutely, I mean, Artemi Panarin probably had the right to do more than just throw a glove across the bench. If that's actually what Brad Marchand said to him.
Yeah. And threw it, you know, with, like I said, whipped it with his left hand. It was just delivered with accuracy. And now, is that the only piece of Panarin, by the way, got a $5,000 fine for this. Mm-hmm. And I laughed. Panarin spoke to the media on the weekend and joked that, yeah, I'm out $5,000, but hey, thanks to the Rangers, I'm making $11.5 million. So I'm good. Like I thought that was a great clip and a quote from Panarin. But is a glove the only thing you can throw at your opponent that won't result in a suspension? Like, you throw your helmet at somebody, suspension, right? You throw your stick at somebody, suspension. I think the glove is the only thing you could throw that you're like, well, you know what? We're going to give you a fine. You probably shouldn't do that, but you're not going to get suspended for it, right?
Yeah, because there's nothing else you could really take off easily and that you could throw without harming someone. Like, you're not taking your shoulder pad off and throwing it at someone.
Your
Unless you're
pad,
in a fight
maybe.
And they, like, ripped one of your pads off and then you throw it at them. You're not unlacing a skate.
No. No.
You're also not going to throw a skate unless you're a psychopath.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking it's glove, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's glove. So a $5,000 fine for Panarin. Marchand is in some hot water for the slew-footing incident. But again, we think that maybe the NHL should investigate what Marchand said to Panarin. Caused him to throw that glove in the first place, and you know we'll see what comes of that. Now we're talking individual debates, and something got reignited last week, Haley. It's an oldie but a goodie. It's Sid versus Ovi. It's Ovechkin and Crosby, and Ovechkin is off to a bananas start, arguably on pace for the best season of his career at his age. And the thing that was thrown out, and now I can't remember, was it our pal Scott Wheeler that was the first to throw this out last week? And basically said, I don't know, like, you know, maybe it's time to start saying that Ovechkin's career is better than Crosby's. And it's a, okay, I think it's a really great debate. And I think the thing that I hate about these debates is it ends up that you start ripping on one guy. And these are two of the best players of all time. Like, if you're making an all-time top 10 list, these guys are on it. And, you know, for Wheeler, we're talking about, like, does Ovechkin end up on the Mount Rushmore of players? If, you know, look, it's a great debate. But I think here's the fair question to ask. It's not which player would you take it at their peak, because I think it's Crosby at his peak, based on his position, based on, you know, some of the things. Again, it's a fair argument. But I think here's the question. Haley, if Ovechkin breaks Gretzky's all-time goals record, is it fair to say he had a better career than Crosby? Not that he's a better player. He had a better career than Crosby. Is that fair?
If you think that goal scoring is the most important thing in the NHL, then sure.
But isn't it kind of important? Like,
is it the sole, like, most important thing in hockey is to be able to score goals, or is it to be able to score goals, make plays, be good defensively, and be one of the best all-around players in the league?
I don't know. I'm not saying that
I don't love the I know, and I'm not either. Like, Ovechkin is going to have an incredible career whether he breaks the record or not. But I think the debate is I tweeted once I said to Wheeler, I was like, why did you do this? And I even tweeted, like, no, we're not doing this debate again. It's 2021. I think it's kind of a tired debate. I look at it the same as the, like, Messi Ronaldo debate in football. It's a little bit different, but, like, it's, you know, you've got a player who is one of the, in Messi, has some of the best footwork. He can go through anybody. If you have five people on him, he can still get out of that situation and score. He's one of the most overall best players in the world in football. Cristiano Ronaldo is a very highly skilled player also, and he can shoot and score from anywhere. And everyone wants to talk about who's better and who has more goals, who's won more Champions League, who's won more trophies, when we could just, like, enjoy the fact that we're watching two of the best players in the world in their prime at the same time, who both approach the game in different ways. Crosby is, in my opinion, one of the best all-around players in the world. When he was in his prime, I think he was the best all-around player in the league. And Ovechkin has been one of the best scorers. And now in this, like, stage of his career that he's in, like, obviously he is getting older and we're watching the way that he's adapting to that. Like, and he's still got it and it's incredible and it's so impressive. But isn't that a little bit of recency bias to look, like, the reason this argument right now bothered me is you had Sidney Crosby coming off of wrist surgery, missing the start of the season, playing one game, then getting COVID and coming back and trying to readjust from wrist surgery and COVID, or I believe he had symptoms. And so you're looking at Sidney Crosby's, like, three games that he played And you're looking at Ovechkin's body of work this season where he's been scoring and saying, well, Ovi's clearly better. And it just reeks of recency bias. I think the debate is blah. I texted Chris, our producer, and said, I think I'm going to sit in silent protest and not say anything.
No. But it's just. I'm telling you, Haley, like, I think if Alex Ovechkin ends up with 900 career goals and he's going to be
the best goal scorer in the world, that doesn't mean the best player.
No, and that's my whole point is I think you can make an argument if Ovechkin breaks Gretzky's record that he had a better career than Crosby. But I'm not saying he's a better player. It's like Marcel Dion. Marcel Dion probably had a better career than, like, I don't know, Peter Forsberg or like Paul Kariya or, like, you know, pick a player and you'd be like, yeah, Marcel Dion had a better career, but he wasn't the better player. I think you could make an argument at the end of this, even though Sid will have 3 cups and all the metrics that you want.
You think goals are better than trophies and championships and stuff?
I just think,
like, think that Ovi, do you think Alex Ovechkin would rather have 3 Stanley Cups or a goal scoring record?
I think, okay, this is such a great question. Okay. Would you rather have 3 Stanley Cups or
Gold medals and the gold medal goals and stuff? What would you rather have?
But if you're telling me I can have the all-time goals record and a Stanley Cup, boy, oh boy, Haley, I don't know. I want to be the Hank Aaron of my sport, or, you know, again, and here comes the Barry Bonds crowd, but whatever. Like, I don't know. I think I might want to be the all-time goal. I might want to knock Gretzky off a perch and have a championship. That's all. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I think it's a great debate.
I think it's a really good debate.
It's good, like, radio podcast fodder, but I think it's just, I feel like we've been talking about this and debating the merits of each player for so long. Like, even Crosby sat down, I think, with ESPN and said, like, I want him to beat the record. That'd be really awesome. Like, I think it's cool the way that their rivalry has evolved over time. I think that's really awesome. And I think Ovi beating the record would be cool. But, like, yeah, I guess I think it's a good debate and it's a fair question. Like, if he breaks that, does he have the better career? I think if goal scoring is the thing that matters the most and winning that record that matters the most, then yeah. I think this is like a choose your own adventure thing, right? Like, we can all pick what we value more.
Right.
In talking about a player's career. And I think, I don't know. I don't know if I would rather look at somebody's, like, whole body of work and say, look at all the things they won and the way that they played. I don't know.
I know.
It's hard to look at a goal scoring record and say, nah, he's not the best.
I think I want to be Ovechkin. I think I want to have the all-time goals record. And now, if it was all-time goals record and no cups, yeah, I'd probably go Sid. But you're giving me a cup. You're giving me 1 Stanley Cup. It's not like Sid is the only guy ever to win 3 cups, right? Like, there's lots of people, Taves and Kane, and, you know, go through the list of players, Messier and all these guys. They all got more than 3 cups. So it's not like there's only 1 guy with 3 cups. Like, there's lots of them. But there might be only 1 guy with 900 goals. That's all. But I think it's a fun conversation. Hey, speaking of Crosby and the Penguins, Haley, we got some finalized news that kind of came out on Monday, and that is the Fenway Sports Group that owns and operates the Boston Red Sox, among other entities, has finally purchased the Pittsburgh Penguins. And they do it, Haley, for $900 million, which I think is kind of significant because now I think the Penguins are kind of like your classic mid-market team, right? They're not New York or Toronto or LA or what have you. They are a mid-market team, and they're close to $1 billion in the sale price. I think that's pretty significant, no?
Yeah, I think so. And it's it's $900 million sale that Pierre LeBrun's reporting, which would be $250 million more than the Seattle buy-in.
Yeah.
So that kind of valuation for an NHL franchise, it's obviously good. I know people were talking about this when the news was initially kind of being speculated and reported. Like, is there some kind of, like, snowball effect for other ownership groups going to come in and try to buy franchises, or franchises going to try to look at what their valuation is? It's probably a humbling thing for owners who may or may not be selling to be like, oh, God, I'm not going to get that much. We're not the Pittsburgh Penguins too. You know, I think it puts a measuring stick in. That's not just like an expansion team, you know. Now teams, if they want to sell, or owners, if they want to sell, they're not looking at the Vegas or Seattle buy-in. They're looking at like a legitimate team, and they can see where they stack up against Penguins. And so obviously that's a big chunk of change. It's almost $1 billion, like you said. I think there was like a bit of, and we talked about this on different podcasts throughout the week too, so we don't have to linger on it too much. But I think it's interesting. I thought there was a little bit of like, oh God, what is this going to mean? Like, what's going to happen when the news initially broke? But it seems like this is a generally positive thing for the Penguins. Yeah. I think Lemieux and Burkle are still going to be involved in stuff with the Penguins, which I know that's a big thing for fans, having Mark Lemieux still involved with the team. He's not going anywhere, it doesn't look like. And it seems like this, you know, this is a ownership group with a strong portfolio who were interested in purchasing the Pittsburgh Penguins to add to their already strong portfolio. Like, they weren't looking to buy a franchise who was struggling that they could help build back up. They wanted to add a franchise that they already knew was strong and profitable. Yep. To make it even more so. And we can see that this group has been, they don't seem to be afraid of spending money, and that can only be mean good stuff for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And Josh Yowie was on the Tuesday show last week, and I think a big part of it is there's this parcel of land around the arena that's just been parking for so long since the old building, Mellon Arena, which I used to go to as a kid, really old, like, igloo barn. That parcel of land's just been, like, empty parking spaces for a long time. There's been, like, a fight over what to do with that, and I think that's going to be a priority for this new ownership group, is to figure out what they're going to do with that. And I think that's a pretty significant thing for Penguins fans. So seems like there's a lot of good that can come from this for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, yeah, all I know is, like, I'm on mountain time. I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, a lot of stuff happened. The Penguin sale, everything with the Canadians coming up today because we're having Arpin on. I was like, oh, a bunch of stuff happened while I was waking up at 8:30. Miss a lot.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Haley, time for us to bring in our featured guest today, because we said this was the biggest news, as much as we, you know, talked about Tkachuk and the bite with Lemieux and Panarin and Marchand and all the stuff that's gone on. The Montreal Canadiens cleaning house was, I think, the biggest story of the weekend. Arpin Basu does a terrific job covering the Montreal Canadiens for us. Arpin, listen, thanks for joining us. I know this has been an interesting Monday for you. We'll start with the Jeff Molson press conference. And was there anything that you heard from the owner that surprised you, shocked you, anything like that on Monday?
Shocked, no. It was encouraging to hear him say that, you know, adding diversity to the hockey operations department and support for the people in those roles was a priority for the group. It's obviously something that did not exist under Marc Bergevin at all. It was just a group of white men, middle-aged white men. So we'll see how that actually plays out. It was also encouraging to hear that the medical performance team is going to put an emphasis on player wellness and mental health, especially with what we've seen with Carey Price of late and Jonathan Drouin last year. So identifying that as a priority, I think, was a good step, and it was a good thing for him to announce. But otherwise, you know, his main point of emphasis was how, you know, this is a fresh start for the Canadians and this is a two-person job. And what the two-person job part of it, why it's important, is, you know, no one is more aware than Jeff Molson that he just hired someone who comes from Massachusetts and does not speak French in a very high-ranking role in his hockey operations department, the highest-ranking role, if we're being honest, in his hockey operations department. So it was important for Jeff to come out and say, well, the GM is ultimately the one who's going to have to live with the decisions and be accountable for them, and that GM is going to be bilingual. If we're being honest here, Jeff Gorton didn't just take this job to be a sort of a passive observer or advisor to this general manager who's yet to be known, but who is likely going to have very little experience in a managerial role, because when you look at some of the candidates that are out there who are bilingual, none of them have extensive experience, and they don't need to, because Jeff Gorton has extensive experience. So the beauty of this situation is the Canadians can go outside the box, maybe even look at a woman for that position, maybe even look at, you know, any number of types of people. They don't even have to come from the hockey world necessarily. They could just have a good managerial background generally to mesh with Jeff Gorton and form sort of a two-headed monster. But I think it's quite evident that Jeff Gorton's going to be running the ship, because even Jeff Molson, when he was asked what the criteria is for the new general manager, deferred to Jeff Gorton and said we should ask him when he finally speaks to the media. So it's pretty clear who's in charge here.
Can you contextualize, Arpin, why now? I know for people who are paying attention, there's been a lot of stuff piling up, but why did these changes happen when they did for the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think Jeff Molson was in a bit of a difficult situation, in the sense that, you know, Marc Bergevin's contract is up at the end of this season. The Canadiens made the Stanley Cup final last year, and Jeff Molson mentioned this right off the hop, is that, yes, they went to the Stanley Cup final last year, but if you look at their last few regular seasons, the performance has been so-so, if not bad. You know, I mean, they made the COVID playoffs, 24th in the league. They squeaked into the playoffs last year, you know, after a terrible regular season, solely because the rest of the Canadian division was not able to take advantage of how bad they were. And then they went on this magical run in the playoffs. But, you know, the actual basis of the team, how it had performed over a larger sample was not all that convincing. But you can't really fire a general manager after you just appeared in the Stanley Cup final. So I think a series of circumstances led to Marc Bergevin entering the final year of his contract. I think Jeff Molson tried to get him to sign an extension after the Stanley Cup final. It's a good thing he didn't. And I think Marc Bergevin's sort of demands were pretty high for that, in terms of money and responsibility and title and all that stuff. So then September came around and Jeff Molson was like, well, let's just wait and see. And then what happened this season. So why now? The Canadiens are terrible. They're off to the worst start in franchise history. They are already out of playoff, like far out of playoff contention. Like, there's no hope of them making the playoffs at all. So, you know, I think it's good to get the next person a head start. And that's what Jeff Gorton has right now. He's got, you know, 60-odd games to fully evaluate everything that's going on in the organization. And so that's probably better than waiting till the offseason and having someone come in then, not having this time to learn about the people who are already in place and then make some more informed decisions later.
Arpin, did it have to be this sticky and messy? And maybe Scott Mellenby is the best example of that, where it felt like it got awkward with Scott Mellenby. And I guess my question is, did it have to be done that way?
No, of course it didn't have to be done that way. But you also shouldn't be making, I don't know to what extent it was a promise to Scott Mellenby that he would be taking over for Marc Bergevin. But there was obviously some level of commitment made in that vein, that Mellenby felt that was his job to lose. And then suddenly he had lost it. I think it's Jeff Molson's prerogative to hire whoever he wants to run his hockey operation. He's the owner of the Montreal Canadiens. This is not a decision that should be made lightly. And if you have to go back on certain promises that you made in the past, then so be it. But it's not a great look to have someone who had been with the organization for 10 or 12 years suddenly leaving on these terms. And it's you know, I think the thing with Jeff Molson is that he's always been someone who would prefer stability than having to make a difficult decision. Today he came out and talked about how I'm the guy who makes the tough decisions and it's my job to do that. But frankly, Jeff Molson avoids difficult decisions as much as possible. In 2018, the Canadiens were, you know, the third or fourth worst team in the NHL. Firing Mark Bergevin at the time would have made a ton of sense. He didn't do that. And, you know, to Mark Bergevin's credit, he actually did a pretty good job from that point forward. But, you know, this is not something that Jeff Molson did lightly. But I think the ugliness of it, if you will, first of all, I don't think there's ever a smooth way to do something like this, to fire so many people and to you know, to make the decision that he made. But I think some of the uglier portions kind of speak to some of the, I guess, indecisiveness that Jeff Molson has had over the years as owner. And it really takes a disaster to get him to act. And that's what he has on his hands right now.
Arpin, I kind of want to go back to something you talked about in your first answer, just about, you know, how you have an Anglophone in Jeff Gorton, and then the general manager is, I guess, he's supposed to be and will be French speaking. But can you explain to our audience why it's important for the next GM to be bilingual? Because I'm not sure if it's a concept that a lot of people completely understand, and maybe that's not giving people enough credit, but could you maybe just go through that a bit?
Yeah, sure. What I think a lot of people don't understand is that outside of Montreal, there's a good chunk of the Quebec population, like a significant chunk of the Quebec population, that does not understand English, does not speak English at all. They represent the, you know, they are hardcore Canadiens fans. Many of, you know, maybe not the ones who are in the Bell Center, but people who live and die with this team. There are many of them who don't speak English at all. So, you know, some people say that, oh, it happens in Europe all the time. Teams hire translators. Fine. But this is not that. The Canadiens represent to the city of Montreal and the province of Quebec, what they represent to this population is different than any other team in the NHL, for sure. I imagine is different than a lot of the teams in Europe. I think the closest comparable would probably be FC Barcelona in Europe, but it's something that is tied, like deeply tied to you know, national identity in Quebec and culture and everything that the Quebec population holds dear. The other thing that's important to Quebec culture and identity is language. They're two of the sort of central tenets of what the Quebec population considers to be important. So basically what it comes down to is it is a sign of respect. That's all it is that we will not ask you to listen to the person making decisions for your hockey team. We will not ask you to try and understand this person in a language that's foreign to you. It's a policy that I think is justifiable. I understand why people feel it limits them, because it does. I understand why people feel it holds them back, because it does. They do not have access to the full gamut of coaches or general managers that can work in the NHL. But I also feel that it's an acknowledgement by the Canadians of their own importance in the society that they live in, and is a sign of respect to people where the question of language is probably the most sensitive issue in this society.
What I'm curious about is now, and whoever takes over as general manager is obviously going to have, you know, quite a lot on their plate. I know Jeff Molson said in that press conference, I'm not afraid of the word rebuild. I don't think our fans would be afraid of the word rebuild. So is it fair to say that the decisions coming in the next few months from hockey operations, Arpin, are solely with that in mind, that this is now a rebuild, that, yeah, they went to the Stanley Cup final, but this is a rebuilding team and you're going to be in for a couple of painful seasons now?
I don't think so. Not necessarily. I mean, again, Jeff Molson deferred that question largely to Jeff Gorton, which again shows the extent to which Jeff Gorton's going to have his hands on the steering wheel here. But I don't think Jeff Molson just said that in the sense because he was asked directly three times about the word rebuild. And, you know, all he was saying is that I'm not ruling it out, that it's something that he'd be willing to do. It's something that he feels the fans would be willing to live through. I honestly don't think the Canadiens are in that situation. It's, we looked at it recently. There are 10 players on the Canadiens' current roster, including Shea Weber, who are signed for at least three more years. No other team in the NHL has as many contracts that last that long. They are as contractually locked into a roster as any team in the NHL. Actually, the only one who rivals them is, ironically, the Rangers, Jeff Gorton's Rangers, former team, who have a lot of money committed to a lot of their core pieces. But a lot of that money is devoted to, you know, Carey Price, Joel Armia, Jake Evans, which is admittedly Shea Weber, who's not probably never going to play again. But they're not the only real core piece in that group of 10 players is Nick Suzuki. Otherwise, it's Josh Anderson, Brendan Gallagher. Like, they're guys who are, like, kind of complementary pieces. So tearing this down is not exactly easy. It's not something that you can just walk in and say, well, we're going to buy out this, and we're going to trade this guy for picks. To do basically what Jeff Gorton did with the Rangers is not going to be nearly as easy to do with the Canadiens. You know, when Gorton announced the rebuild in New York within a month, JT Miller, Ryan McDonough, Michael Grabner, Nick Holden, Rick Nash, like all these players were gone within a month. I don't think he's going to be able to do that in Montreal. He's very limited. And so given that circumstance, and given that a lot of these players are not bad players, you know, Josh Anderson's not a bad player. Gallagher's not a bad player. Tyler Toffoli's got a couple more years on his contract. He's not a bad player. I mean, they have some decent pieces here. They just don't fit together. So I think it's going to be up to Gorton to figure out how to make them fit a little better and maybe create a little bit of room under the cap. But I don't think they're in a position to go full on rebuild right now.
Do you think Gorton's going to take some time to be there, look at the team, look at the coaching staff before making any changes? Like, is there something like that that could be coming, or do we think he's comfortable with the bench right now?
Well, I think the beauty of this situation, considering it's a lost season already, Jeff Gorton doesn't really have to do anything. He can literally sit there and watch and evaluate. I mean, what's the point of hiring a coach right now? Like, there's really, and, you know, too bad for Dominique Ducharme, but he's basically going to have to prove to Jeff Gorton that he deserves this job and whoever the next GM is. But this is, it's what makes the timing of this make a lot of sense, is that you have this 60 games to work with where you can observe and learn about this organization from top to bottom. And honestly, if I were the Canadiens, I wouldn't be rushing into hiring a GM either. I would wait until the offseason when everyone, you know, when you have full availability of the limited pool of candidates that you have to work with if you need a bilingual GM. So Jeff Gorton could sit back. He can run the trade deadline, trade Ben Chiarot for a pick, trade Brett Kulak for a pick, trade anyone else you can, really, other than, you know, your young core. But, you know, if you can get some other picks for some of these other guys who have term on their contracts, then so be it. I think Jeff Gorton is more than qualified to handle that. But if I were them, I would be in no rush to make any other moves. Just sit back, let Jeff Gorton learn about this organization, the people who are in it, the players who are playing for him. See how they react to adversity, which frankly so far has not been all that impressive. You know, as soon as things went south for this team, it just continued going south. Not a lot of pushback. So let him learn those things. And he has a long time. He has months to do it and learn everything he needs to know about this team. So if I were him, I wouldn't be rushing into any moves. I mean, maybe other than hiring some people that he likes to work with, but otherwise, you know, firing more people wouldn't make a whole lot of sense right now.
And maybe just to close this out, Arpin, I think there's a lot of hockey fans all over North America that would just love to know if there's any update on Carey Price, how he's doing. Obviously, I think everyone is pulling for him, given what he's up against. Is there any kind of update, any idea of how Carey is doing?
Well, he was on the ice this morning in a tracksuit long before the morning skate. So that's an encouraging sign. Dominique Ducharme mentioned him having four steps to returning to the team, one of which was, you know, mental and physical conditioning. The other one was getting on the ice, which is what we saw this morning. The next one would be practice, and the next one would be working with the goalie coach on the ice, which has not happened yet. And then the next one would be practicing with the team. Then it would be playing. And so the other beauty of this terrible situation for the Canadians is that Carey Price should feel no pressure to return 1 second before he's absolutely ready to return. You know, there's no pressing issue where the Canadians desperately need Carey Price to show up for their playoff lives, you know, for their playoff chances to remain alive. Their playoff chances are dead. So Carey Price could take all the time he needs, not feeling the pressure to come back sooner. And it looks like that's what he's going to do. And I hope that's what he does, you know, because I think it'll be great when Carey Price reaches the day when he can talk to the fans about his decision and what he went through and what he did and how he bettered himself by seeking help. Because I think he has a full understanding that he can be a large influence on a lot of people who are maybe going through some of the same issues that he went through. And be inspired by his desire to seek help. Because if people feel they have too much to lose by admitting they have a problem and seeking help, well, not too many people had more to lose than Carey Price did, and he did it anyway. So, you know, I'm hopeful that we won't see him for a while. And I don't think we will, you know, considering he was in a tracksuit today. He wasn't even in goalie pads. So we're probably weeks away from Carey Price being in a Canadiens uniform. And I hope that's the case, because I want him, you know, I would want him to take all the time he needs.
Well, listen, Arpin, this was a great update on what has obviously been a very eventful 72 hours for the team that you cover. Appreciate your time. And hey, listen, let's give you a little chance to plug your own podcast here, because there are obviously some Habs fans and hockey fans that might want the latest. Free plug for your podcast here, Arpin.
Free plug. Well, our podcast is called The Athletic Support or Le Sport Athletique. We had an emergency pod Sunday evening where Marc-Antoine was in an airport. So you hear the PA announcements going in the background. But we felt it important to get our thoughts out on sort of the monumental events of Sunday. But we record every Wednesday normally. So by Wednesday, late afternoon or early evening, you get a new episode. They alternate between French and English because it's a Montreal podcast. And so it should. And on Wednesday's episode will be in French, but there's an episode right now that you can go listen to from Sunday night in English with Marc-Antoine and I talking about all this stuff for about 40 minutes.
Awesome stuff. So yeah, check that out if you're looking for more Habs content. Arpin, thanks for this, and we'll get you again, I'm sure, down the road.
All right, thanks, guys.
Time for us to wrap up the show with a little, you got a couple questions from listeners, we got some multiple choice madness, and want to hit on this. This is actually a good question. This came to us via Twitter, and I think all of a sudden, there are some louder, the whispers are getting louder, and it almost feels like it almost feels like now we should prepare ourselves for the fact that we may not see NHLers at the Olympics. And this is a question that was tweeted to us by Ozzy, who says, what do you think the sentiment is with the NHL going to the Olympics, seeing the disturbing situation that is happening overseas right now? And as you look at it, I think there's a fear that the COVID numbers aren't great in Beijing. There might be this kind of a safety issue from the players. I think there's a fear from players that if I go over there and I test positive, what if I'm stuck in Beijing for 2-3 weeks? January 10th, Pierre LeBrun has often talked about this. That is the date where the NHL can essentially, Haley, pull the ripcord and say, hey, sorry, we're out. We're not going to the Olympic Games. As we get closer to it and you listen to some of those insiders, whether it's Pierre LeBrun and others, it seems like we should start to open up our minds to the idea that they're not going to the Olympic Games. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but it feels like that's where we're trending, no?
Yeah, I think it's obviously with you know, more games getting postponed, if that happens more, we're going to start thinking about that a little bit more too, with just games getting pushed back. It's 3 days. The Sens were 3 days. Islanders were 3 days as well, I believe. It doesn't look like a whole lot when you're looking at the individual team cases. But if more teams start getting games postponed and it's 3 days, 3 days, 3 days, 3 days, then you're starting to push games back to, in a way that the NHL won't be able to send people just based on that. And then you have all of the, and I don't want to say that to raise the alarm again, it's only been the two teams. And I think we've seen insiders and say, I don't know if that's enough. I think The underlying thing here is the health and safety of players and the health and safety of just people in the world. But Gary Bettman has also said that he made a promise to the players that they would go to the Olympics and they're going to do everything that they can to do that. I don't know if we believe Gary Bettman when he says that wholeheartedly, but I do think that it's a really important thing for the NHL players, for the NHLPA. So I think like they're going to try to find a way to go and do this. But at the end of the day, if it's not safe due to COVID or other factors that are happening around the world in Beijing within the context of the Olympics, if it's just not possible, then it's not going to be possible. And I don't know if right now, like, I don't know if we have enough of that stacking up to say like, no, they're not going to go. I think it looks like it looks like more of a topic of discussion right now because of things that are happening for sure. But I don't know if we're in a spot where we can say like, yeah, there's no chance they're going to the Olympics.
If the NHL ever puts out a statement announcing that the players are not going to the Olympic Games, I say we hired Gilbert Gottfried to read that statement.
To read the statement?
Yeah.
I think we go with Winnie the Pooh.
Or Winnie the Pooh. Actually, that might be the Eeyore tone of all Eeyore tones right there.
The Eeyore voice actor is not on there. It's just Winnie the Pooh or Tigger.
Yeah, no, this is too downtrodden for Tigger. We need.
Also, I was looking at Mimeo, not Cameo. I made a mistake. Cameo is where the high ballers are. I looked at Cameo. It's not cheap.
Okay. That's good to know. Hey, one more question here from a listener via social media. And look, it's been a rough week for the Montreal Canadiens, the Vancouver Canucks, the Ottawa Senators. Max wants to know, which of those three teams has the bleakest outlook? Vancouver, Montreal, or Ottawa? Haley.
Oh, gosh. It probably depends who you ask and what market, right? Like, I'm sure every market's going to, most of those markets are going to say they have it worst. I feel like Vancouver is pretty bad just because I don't know how you see a way out there. I think with Montreal, Montreal kind of just looks like a team who probably they punched out of their weight class last year, looked a lot better than they did, came this year. Lost a bunch of players. Obviously, Carey Price wasn't with the team to start the year for an important personal reason to take care of himself. But I think a lot went wrong for the Canadiens. But you can at least kind of see, like, okay, they're going to bring a new brain trust in. They're going to get a fresh start. They're going to, you know, are they going to rebuild? Are they just going to start from scratch? Whatever it may be, they're kind of at that starting place where you can maybe see something happening in the future if you believe in the people they're putting in place. But with the Sens and the Canucks, like, they don't have that yet. It's the same people who got them into this point that are still at the helm. And how are fans supposed to see the way out? Is Jim Benning going to be the one to fire Travis Green and hire a new coach when Jim Benning is the one whose hands are all over? Jim Benning and Francesco Accolini, their hands are all over everything that hasn't worked. Is Jim Benning going to be the one that's hiring the coach that's finally going to make it work, that's going to make the changes that make it work, or is he going to be gone? Is it Travis Green who takes the fall? Is there players who are going to be on the way out? With the Ottawa Senators, I thought the rebuild was over. So I don't know which one specifically is more bleak, but I would definitely say it's between the Canucks or the Sens. And a lot of that's because you have the people who, the architects of the mess, are still in charge.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I actually think Ottawa's got a great core of young players. Like, you can sell me on the on-ice product. And even Vancouver, Quinn Hughes. And, you know, I know Besser's had his ups and downs and Pedersen's had his ups and downs, but there's some nice young pieces. The Habs have whiffed on so many of their draft picks in recent years. And the ones that they haven't whiffed on, whether it's Sergachev or I guess to some extent Kotkaniemi, they're not even there. Right. So my concern on Montreal is, you know, you got these guys that are, whether it's Josh Anderson or Brendan Gallagher or Dvorak or Jeff Petrie, like, you got a bunch of guys locked up. And, like, where are you going? Like, where are you going in the next couple of years? Mike Hoffman is there on a longer deal. Again, you don't know how it's going to play out with Carey Price. So it's just they're the ones that are caught in the most awkward situation. I actually think Ottawa and Vancouver, you can sell me on the fact that they might be okay on the ice. And like you said, maybe the decision makers, maybe that's part of the issue there. But I don't know when the Montreal Canadiens are going to be competitive again. And that to me is leaves them with a little bit of a bleak outlook.
Yeah, but if they're committing to starting from scratch and doing it right, I don't know if I look at Montreal and say that's a bigger mess than what's happening in Vancouver right now. Maybe that's because I'm reading too much Thomas Dranz lately, who's been doing a really good job of this, and Arpin's doing a great job too. But I don't know. It seems like it's a little bit more messy in places like Vancouver than it is Montreal. I know that they've got the good young core, and the pieces in Montreal are exactly what you said. But I'm pretty sure, don't the Habs have – I think they probably have the same amount of wins. They both have more wins than the Senators do. And a promising young roster, as we're seeing, can only get you so far. They're not doing great right now. So, and what are they going to look like, and what pieces are going to surround them based on the people who are still in charge?
All right, Haley, and as we always do, a little multiple choice madness on your Monday here. Now, it was a significant week in the NHL. You don't often see players with this type of term and dollar amount and star power placed on waivers in the middle of the season, but we had it on two occasions this week. San Jose doing it with Evander Kane. I think that was kind of expected. Ottawa doing it with Matt Murray, though, was wow. It was like, didn't see that one coming. So here's question number one. Haley, multiple choice madness. Who's going to end up playing more games in the NHL in the future? Is it A, Evander Kane, or B, Matt Murray?
Part of me wants to say Evander Kane, even despite everything that's happened and everything that he did. There's a lot of examples of players who've done questionable and bad things that go on to continue playing because they are good. And Evander Kane is a better forward than Matt Murray as a goalie right now. And I think there's teams who are going to look at Evander Kane and say, that's a point-per-game player, an elite winger. He can add something to our team, and they're going to go for him. We saw it with everything that happened with Tony DeAngelo. I don't know if anyone thought that Tony was going to play, and now he's in COVID protocol right now, but he's having an excellent start to the season with the Carolina Hurricanes, and he's showing again why he is, you know, a really talented, really skilled, very good defender. It was never his skill and aptitude at the position that was a question. It was all the personal off-ice stuff, which is the same with Evander Kane. But I think he's probably going to play more because he's good. And Matt Murray has struggled for a while. He hasn't been the Stanley Cup winning goalie for, 3-4 years now?
Yeah.
There's always value in goaltenders, but there's more value in top-line wingers who can score at the rate that Evander Kane has. He was really good last season, and I think teams are going to remember that.
Yeah, you know what? I think you made a really, really good point when you said, right now, Evander Kane is probably a better forward than Matt Murray as a goalie. That's a fair statement. And it's not to say that Matt can't or won't get it back, but when you've had a sub-900 save percentage for three consecutive seasons, and now you've got a cap hit north of $6 million for the next couple of years, like, here's the thing on Matt Murray, Haley. Real dollars, he is owed $8 million in real cash coming up in the 2023-2024 season. So think about that. When you're paying somebody $8 million to be your goalie in 2 years from now, what do you want them to be? They should be a franchise goalie. They should be stealing you games and keeping you in, not being sent to the American Hockey League. And
he's making more than Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, I know. It's
5 shutouts this season.
It's tough, and you make a good point in that Kane, look, if these guys are going to end up anywhere, it's either going to be because the team, San Jose and Ottawa, retain salary, or because they get bought out in the summertime, right? Like, there's no way Evander Kane, with his $7 million cap hit, is being traded from San Jose somewhere else with no salary being retained. I don't think, right? Unless there's some awful contract that comes back. And same with Matt Murray. I don't see Ottawa trading him to an Arizona or a Buffalo, whoever else you might want to speculate might be looking for a goalie, without Ottawa taking half the money or a bad contract back. So I look at this and think you're more likely to find a team willing to gamble on Evander Kane to come in and be a 20-goal scorer than you are for Matt Murray coming in and being a 920 save percentage guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially for the price of admission, like the ticket, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So the other multiple choice madness question I have for you on this Monday, we've spent a little bit of time talking about dysfunctional Canadian teams. We got a little dysfunctional Canadian team tournament happening this week. Monday, it's Vancouver and Montreal. Wednesday, it's Vancouver and Ottawa. But Haley, that's not the game I want to ask you about. Man, maybe you're going to pick Vancouver, Ottawa. I don't know. Here's my question. What's the most interesting game on the docket Wednesday night? I think this is going to be really fun. Wednesday night. Is it A, Colorado against Toronto, B, Vancouver against Ottawa, or C, Pittsburgh, Edmonton? Haley, you could choose one game to sit down and watch in its entirety for whatever reason. Entertainment, misery, star power. What are you picking? Avs, Leafs, Canucks, Sens, Penguins, Oilers.
I want to say Canucks, Sens, just to be like, this is hilarious. But I wonder if it's really bad that it ends up just being kind of sad. Or maybe it ends up being really good because they're both on the same level of struggle right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably watch that one to see what it looks like for sure. Probably over Toronto, Colorado. But the Pittsburgh Edmonton game will probably be a good one. McDavid and Draisaitl have been pretty lights out to start the season. I mean, especially on the power play. Did you know that Draisaitl only has six of his, 20 goals are at 5-on-5? Like, he's just a monster
power play machine
on the power play, which is impressive. Yeah. It's crazy. So, I mean, the Oilers are obviously a fun team to watch if you're watching them when they're one of their top two lines are out there. And the Penguins have been playing really well as of late. They've got everything starting to click. They did enough in the absence of Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Rust. So many players were out, and they just kind of kept it on the rails just enough. And now they're starting to look really good as they're getting guys back. And obviously Malkin's not back yet, but the Penguins are always an exciting team to watch, and they've been clicking really well lately. Tristan Jarry is playing really well, so I mean, I'll probably end up watching that game over the other two.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm probably going to be stuck covering Ottawa Vancouver because it's in my market, and it's going to be a weird game. Like, you almost feel like, does the loser of that game, if they lose will changes come from that? Like, you wonder, right? Like, is that a tipping point game for either of those franchises if you lose to the other guys in a kind of embarrassing fashion or a lopsided fashion? Would that be a catalyst for change? That would be the only reason why you tune in. It's almost like a car wreck type of thing where you're driving by. You're like, yeah, I kind of want to see what's going on over there. But how do you not look at Colorado and Toronto and think, like, what's going on? Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been on fire. And they've been fun, and they've been competitive, and they've been good defensively, and they've been scoring goals and buckets. And they went out west, and they cleaned out the California teams. And this could be, again, if Colorado gets – you know, all their things back, like this could be a potential Stanley Cup final preview if everything goes well. But again, I think that might be the most entertaining game. I think Colorado-Toronto Wednesday, Haley, is going to be super entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, Cale Makar is fun to watch. You wonder if Nate McKinnon's going to be back in the lineup because obviously he's going to add a ton to that. He's still out. But like watching Cale Makar work his magic on the blue line is always pretty fun to watch. And yeah, the Leafs have been rolling too. So I think all three will be interesting. Just depends on if you're looking for skill or a train wreck.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to leave it there.
Train wreck's was a little harsh.
Yeah. A little bit.
You called it a car wreck.
So I did.
Whatever Ian said.
Yeah. Listen, we'll leave it there. This was a super fun podcast. The hour flew by. I'm going to leave you with some homework though for next week. Okay, Haley? Before Monday's show, you need to find some B, C-level celebrity either on Cameo. What's the other one? Memo? Mimo? Whatever?
Mimo? Memo? I don't know.
I thought it was Memo. But anyway, whatever it is. For under $100, can we find somebody to do the intro to the show for us at some point in December? You know? Somebody like in that realm.
Do we have to know who they are?
Like, it has to be well enough that they're known by most people if you kind of say their name or something like that. So under $100, can we get somebody 45 seconds, they're just going to read the intro. That's your homework, okay?
All right.
She's on it.
I'm doing it right now.
But don't come back with like Laura from Family Matters or something, you know? Like it's got to even be... Actually, no, wait, you know what? Never mind. Laura from Family Matters is good enough for me for $100.
Okay.
Changed my mind. All right. We'll leave it there. And hey, listen, if you got some suggestions for who you'd like to see us try to get to do the intro.
Do you know how much Gilbert Gottfried would have cost? He is on sale right now for Black Friday for $191.
See? This is why. This is the time to do it.
Shooter McGavin's on here.
See? Okay. Like see if you can find us somebody. Well, maybe we'll make... If Gilbert Gottfried is $191, then let's take the number to 200 and under. Okay, because maybe $100. Yeah, at that point, you're not getting anybody, right? So 200 and under, let's see what we can do. Work
I'll
our magic.
Some good
and,
value.
And, maybe our listeners can drop a little rating and review. Drop us a note. Let us know what you want us to see. Track it down. I want to remind you, though, of a couple of things. Like I said off the top, if you're listening to us on Monday, you got an opportunity to jump on an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Again, that amazing deal ends at midnight on Monday. So if you're listening to us on Monday, jump on it. athletic.com/hockeyshow. $1 a month for 12 months. And you can also subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You'll get all the bonus content from our entire Athletic Network. You can start with a 30-day free trial. And then it's just 99 cents a month after that.